Well, I think again, like last week, it'd be really nice to start off with a chant to get the vibrations of the place right, and also to get your vibrations right as well. What we're going to do tonight is we're going to chant, but it's not going to be a chant. It is actually going to be mantra yoga. And the one difference between chanting and mantra yoga is that mantra yoga is there to raise your kundalini energy. It's there to raise your spiritual energies. And it actually works through a process inside your mind. So we're going to start off chanting Hari Om. It's an Indian chant. Ha-ri-om. It means hello God, or I'm coming home, or something like that. Hurry on home. Ha, when you chant that, I'd like you to visualize your base chakra, the very base of your spine. I'd like you to visualize when that ha goes, there's a vibration sounding at the base of your spine. And because we're going to be working with the spine, it's really nice if you can sit up straight, to actually stretch out your spine from the very base right up to the crown. You can do that on the ground, or you can anywhere you like. It really does make a big difference because the spine is just so important in spiritual life. You know the spine? The spine is part of the brain. Brain cells extend themselves down through the center of the bones, the vertebrae of the spine, and the brain extends itself all the way down the inside, the spinal canal, down to the very base of the spine. And surrounding the brain, you've got this aqueous humor. Brain, it's what protects the brain against heavy shocks. It's bathed in water, therefore it can take shocks of up to 50 gravities. You know, if you go into space, they used to have in the science fiction stories, how would these people accelerate and decelerate very quickly? Well, they just used to bathe them in water, and then they didn't used to get shocked. It's like a stasis field in Star Trek. So the brain is bathed in this water, and so is the spine. You get the spinal fluid. That's the stuff they draw off in the hospitals to check the toxicity and the bacterial content. So the whole of your spine is part of your brain. And as you well know, all the chakras, all the energy centers, they extend out along the spine. And there are three major ones in the brain. You've got the third eye, you've got Ajna chakra. At the crown of the head, you've got something called Sahasrara chakra. And that connects you with your higher self. It's the rainbow bridge, the connection with your higher self. And at the very back of the head, you've got something called the ulna major center. And the three chakras in the head form a triangle of energy when they start to work correctly. And they don't really start to work correctly until you've cleared out the base chakra. Because on the path of enlightenment, the third initiation is to do with a stream of energy flowing from the base chakra up to the head centers. And you do not lose that fear, that negative energy, which blocks the base chakra until you have lost your fear of security, fear of loss of money, fear of going out in a dark night, go around roundabouts the wrong way, fear of losing your money, fear of losing your job, fear of losing your loved ones. And in the last respect, the last fear to go in the whole of humanity is the fear of death. Not the namby-pamby imaginary death that we're thinking about, because we're all going to die, but the real death. The death which is so deep inside of us, in our unconscious, that we do not know that that real fear exists. So when that last fear leaves, then the head chakras start to be enlivened. So when we start to chant, ha, if you visualize that vibration deep down in the base chakra, then this can have a profound effect on your enlightenment. And when we go into ri, imagine that that energy, still keep that ha vibrating in the base chakra, never let it, never lose that vibration, visualize it. When you go into ri, make that energy jump right up into your throat. Ha, ri, into the throat. And then om, sacred word of the Hindus, doesn't work without the visualization. Om is composed of three syllables, A, U, and M. A, again in the base chakra, ah. U, up into the heart, ooh. And then M, in the nasal cavity behind the nose, up into the third eye. As it gets finer, move it up into the crown chakra. And then as your last breath leaves your body, send your intention upwards and away into the center of the universe, the end of the Om. Hurry on home. So we'll try a chant just to raise the vibrations. Again, close your eyes, concentrate on the straightness of the spine, concentrate on the visualization with the Hari Om. And the way we're going to do it, to start with, is that I'm going to chant the first line, and then you're going to chant the first line afterwards. And I think it goes on for about three or four lines, just to sort of get things going, okay? So I'll chant the first line, then it's your turn, and Devi will lead your response, I think. Thank you, Devi. Thank you. Okay. Hari Om, Hari Om, Hari 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 Om. Take a deep breath in. Hari Om, Hari Om, Hari 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 Om, Hari Om, Hari Om, Hari Hari Om. Hari Om, Hari Om, Hari 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 Om.
Hari Om, Hari Om, Hari 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 Om.
Hari 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 Om.
Hari Hari Hari
Hari Om. Hari 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 Om.
Hari 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 Om.
Hari 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 Om. Hari 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 Om.
Hari 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 Hari
Hari Hari Hari Om. Hari 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 Om. Hari Om Hari Om Hari 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 Om. Hari Om. Wait a bit. Hari What is the matter that we are talking about this week? I will read it out. It says, this week we are to talk about the digestion of energy, as well as digesting food. We also need to learn how to digest and combine energies. If we do not, it becomes stuck, creates more blockage, and stagnates in our body. This week, we examine the law of threes, the law of sevens, the completion of the octave, and its relevance to the chakras, or the parallel processes of the mind. And when we're talking about energy, we are not just talking about the intellectual energy which I am giving out, the ideas and the thought forms. We're also talking about the sort of energy that the Buddha was talking about when he came out one day to give a talk. Now, the Buddha became enlightened when he was around about the age of 37, 38, 40, something like that. And it's said that if a person becomes enlightened before the age of 40, then it's likely that they'll die around about the age of 40. It's very difficult for a person to hang around for longer than the age of 40. But if they get enlightened around about the age of 40, they'll carry on for another 40 years quite happily, talking and talking and talking. And the Buddha was no exception to that rule. He became enlightened late in life after he had seen the meaninglessness of his life. There he was in the palace, and when he was born, the great astrologers of the time had said to his father, that man is either going to become the greatest king this kingdom has ever seen, or he's going to become the greatest mystic, the greatest hermit, the greatest wastrel, in the king's terms, that this planet has ever seen. And the king said, well, how do I prevent him from going off and fulfilling his destiny? And the astrologer said, you must keep all knowledge of the horrible things on this planet from him, especially the knowledge of death from him. And for the first years until he was 28, everything old, everything ugly was kept from Prince Siddhartha's view. His father supplied him with the most beautiful of virgins every night, parties every night. Everything was beautiful. Until one day, he was taken around the palace by his chief charioteer out into the city, and by accident, he caught sight of one old man on the route. And he said to the charioteer, what is wrong? What's the matter with that poor fellow? And what could the charioteer say but, that man is old, my lord. And the Buddha didn't leave it at that. He said, well, what is this oldness? And what could the charioteer say but, I'm afraid that there's something that happens to us all, my lord. As we get older in years, so our energy and strength fails us, and we become wrinkled and old. And the worst thing of all, he could have said, and finally, we die. What is this death, O charioteer? when our energy fails us, my Lord, that is the time when we are no more. So the Buddha said, well, what is the point of me being here enjoying this good life here in this palace if eventually I am going to die? There's a great long story of how he left the palace, how he left his most beautiful wife and his young child on the very night of her birth, and went off into the world to try to find out the meaning, not of life, but of death. And after 5 long years of trying everything that the world had to offer in mysticism, he eventually took the middle path and became enlightened on the full moon under a Bodh tree. A Bodh tree. Very famous tree, the Bodh tree. You know, the Buddhism spread like wildfire throughout India. And for up to 500 years after the Buddha had died, it went on. And the Buddha said it would fail after 500 years because he initiated a woman into the company of monks. He said, I was hoping that it was going to last for 5,000 years, but now that a woman has been entered into the ranks, I'm afraid it'll only last for 500 years. And the sacred tree that the Buddha had become enlightened under was a very old tree. It's a tree that lasts a long time. It's very easy to propagate. And the Bodh tree of the Buddha died of old age after 500 years. But before it died, a small twig was taken from it and taken to Ceylon. And that twig grew into a fantastic tree. And now, just recently, it's been taken back to the grove of the Buddha and it has been replanted there. And the tree is now growing in India, where the Buddha was born. And the Buddha became enlightened at round about the age of 40, as I described. And for the next 40 years, he talked non-stop, incessantly. And he said to the people, look, I'm not here for the vast mass of people. He said, I am here for that 1% of people whose degree of evolution will enable them to hear what I have to say. He said to them, those who have ears to hear, let them hear. For those people that can take that 1% of chance and use the energy which I have to give to them for their own enlightenment. And thousands of people were drawn towards the Buddha. A great company of monks sat around him on his daily talks, and many of them became enlightened. It was a vast energy center in the evolution of humanity. Many people became enlightened at that time by listening to the Buddha's words. And the Buddha talked every day for 40 years, traveling around the north of India from town to town where he was invited, giving talks, provoking arguments, discussions. And many times they tried to poison him. Great jealousies, great energies were released by what he did. But on one particular day, He came out as usual and sat beneath the bow tree, thousands of monks around him. And he just sat. And for 1 hour, he said nothing. And he had this little flower, a white flower in his lap, that he was just looking at. And after that 1 hour, one of the monks moved, and he started to laugh. And the Buddha stood up, and he walked through the thousands of monks to the one monk who had been laughing. And his name is recorded as being Mahakasyapa. And he gave that flower to Mahakasyapa, and he said, "You have understood." And he gave him the transmission of the flower. And he said to him that many people come here to hear my words, but it is not the words you are meant to hear. It is the energy between the words with which I transmit, not the intellectual knowledge of what I am saying, but it's actually the energy between the words that you are meant to hear. So when we are talking about the digestion of energy, it's a nice thing to know about these energies. And I talked about stuck and stagnant energies within rooms and within us. And really, these stuck and stagnant energies are the only thing that prevent our enlightenment. If we didn't have these stuck and stagnant energies, there would be a clear flow of energy through our bodies. And that energy is called bliss or ananda. But because we've got these stuck and stagnant energies, and I've been talking about these stuck and stagnant energies for the last 3 weeks so far, I've talked about the energy of food and about the quantities of food that we eat create great quantities of toxins, great quantities of mucus, great quantities of stuff that eventually turns us wrinkly and old, provides free radicals, and eventually kills us before our time. With all the concomitant old age diseases of Alzheimer's disease caused by too many toxins from heavy metals, being proved recently by doctors. Arthritis of the hips caused by too many toxins being eaten. All the great mystics, they say to people, eat organic food. Don't eat too much of it. Don't eat heavy food. Remember that food is not just food, it is also the emotional, vibrational energy of food. And they say to people, try not to kill. Thou shalt not kill, it says in the Bible. It's not just of human beings, it's also of the animals that have been placed in our care on this planet. They're not there to provide our food source, they're actually there to be looked after and encouraged to evolve by means of our energies in a perfect world. And all the animals that come into our ken, all the animals that become our pets and work with us, they take our energy, they take our mind space, they become almost human. So we talk about the stuck energies inside the chakras. We talk about the base chakra, we said a little bit about it before, security. And then we talk about another favorite chakra of mine, the second chakra, the chakra of relationships. Before you can even get into the clearing of the base chakra, first step, or the second step, is to deal with relationships, because relationships provide so much pain in the life of a human being. You know, the Buddha said attachment leads to pain. And the chakra of attachment is the second chakra, the abdominal chakra, the chakra of sex, sexual energy, stuck, stagnant, painful energy. And when there's so much stuck and stagnant energy there, we can't breathe because we're afraid to move the abdominal chakra because of the pain that comes from it every time we move it. And if we can't breathe, then we have no energy. And if we have no energy, we can't digest our food. And if we have no energy, we can't eliminate our food. We die before our time. All the diseases in the end come from lack of energy. I shouldn't say all, but a lot of them come from lack of energy. And as we get full up with these vast amounts of negative energy, so our energy becomes depressed. So we have no joie de vivre. So our rooms become full of the cast-off negative energies and become dull and dark and depressing places. And because we are so sensitive, because human beings have this potential, some people, most people, can walk into a place and they can feel the energy of the place. They can feel the lightness and the brightness of a totally spiritual place. They can feel the pain and depression of a normal place. So the first thing I wanted to say was that there are many spiritual ways of clearing out the spiritual energy. Any spiritual practice will raise and enliven you. The practice of yoga, the practice of breathing, the practice of meditation, all of them will help you to get rid of these negative energies. And in one of these talks, some week, I will talk about the mechanism whereby all of these different practices get rid of all of these negative energies. The fact is that that is what self-development, that is what spiritual techniques are there to do. They are there to get rid of all of your pain. I don't know if you've even heard of massage. I mean, even massage is a beautiful way for you to get rid of that pain. There's a very famous massagist in America called Ida Rolfe, who developed the Rolfe technique. Not that I recommend it, but there's an interesting story whereby Ida Rolfe was massaging this man's arm. And if you want to have torture, you go to have Rolfing. Because Rolfing is the very deepest and heaviest and painful massage you can have. And she was going very deeply into this man's arm. And there was a scar in that area. And as she came to the scar and really pressed in deeply, this man had a spontaneous image of the day that he had cut his arm with an axe. He'd hit the tree, it bounced off, poof, into his arm, and his arm became very stiff. And as she massaged into that, the memory of that pain came up into his consciousness. And because he was an older, more mature being, he didn't put the pain in his arm the way he had done when he was younger. He actually processed and digested that pain. And having had that vision, the arm became very supple because she had taken out, expressed the negativity in the arm. He had digested the old pain and he was freed. And this is what spiritual practice is meant to be. There's a lot of emotion, there's a lot of pain held in the body, and it's not just the arm. The major area that yoga works on is actually in the spine, the area where all the energy centers are. area where all the chakras are, the area that communicates between all the chakras. You know, in a computer you've got buses that run information from one processor to another. Well, you just think of those chakras as being processors working for different purposes, and the bus is the spine, then you can see how useful it is to be able to clear out obstructions on the data highway of the spine. You can see how useful it is to clear out the blockages that block the processors on that data bus of the spine. And two, energy enhancement techniques, which is what we teach, also utilize yoga, they utilize breathing, they utilize meditation, but they also utilize very high and effective techniques which are based upon old yogic practices, which are based upon old Taoist practices, which are based upon very ancient and effective alchemical practices, to help people to ground, to get rid of that pain, those blockages, that negative energy in the quickest, most effective possible way. Energy enhancement is based upon yoga and breathing, but eventually it moves on into movement of energies and grounding of energies, to the very first stage. And not only do we have this pain and negativity stuck inside, when we can start to remove that energy inside us, so we magically develop psychic powers to be able to ground that energy outside us. So any healer, any person that has worked with energies can walk into a place and they can get rid of the negative energies. They can make that place full of light. In the same way that you can touch water and you can charge it up. By being able to work inside, and remember that Hermes Trismegistus said, as within, so without. As you can get rid of those painful energies inside, so you can start to get rid of those energies outside. And by getting rid of them outside, you can start to enliven every person around you. Instead of being a dull, depressing person who nobody wants to go and see, because you're so much in pain yourself that the poor me in you tries to say to everybody around you, what right have you got to be happy when I'm so painful? Instead of being in that state, you can be a source of light to everybody around you. Who is the happiest person? The happiest person is that person who makes everybody around them happy. Or at least that is their intention. We can try. And remember that as you have so much pain inside, as within, so without, so everything in your life, every person in your life, every job in your life, every experience in your life is merely a reflection of that which you have inside. So your whole life is a feedback on what you have inside. Remember, every time you criticize anybody outside, you point your finger at them and you say, I don't like you. And you're pointing at the very thing that is your worst problem inside as well. I don't like. And it's inside you. Remember, when you're pointing one finger at somebody else, there are three fingers pointing back at you. Use criticism to look at your own problems. Don't look at the mote in somebody else's eye. Look at the beam in your own. Use what God has given you, to find out your problems, deal with your problems, and magically you start to deal with everybody else's problems around you. It's just the way of it. So, the law of threes. What is the law of threes, he says? Well, that's a rhetorical question, so I will answer it with... It seems that there are many esoteric practices, many esoteric secrets that are based upon this triangle of energies. And many different things can be based upon these triangles. It provides a relationship. It provides a means of understanding the process whereby energies are transmuted and transformed. Because we're talking about this pain inside. We're talking about raising our energies. And triangles give us some intellectual idea of how this occurs. I'd like to tap some of Ian's knowledge here, because we were talking on Sunday about Jungian archetypes and how they always seem to go in triangles. And I'd just like to ask you, what are the two aspects of a king?
The tyrant and the wimp. The fallen king, that is, of course, the...
So, what you've got is you've got an archetype of the king, and all of us have got the king inside of us. But if the king is split, if we live in the world of duality, then we alternate between being a tyrant and being a wimp. And we easily flow between the two. We are a king, but we can only be a king when we adhere to the middle path. When we know that we are not the tyrant and we know that we are not the wimp, we just are, then we are a king. But until we know that, until we have gone outside of our duality, you see, the third point on the triangle always points out the middle path. It always points out the fact that the alternative is living in the world of duality, of alternating between the poor me and the violator, between being a poor me, an alcoholic, a person who is so stuck in their own misery that they can't get out of it, and then the person who gets angry with other people for being so rich, of being so jealous because they're so full of energy and happiness that they become the violator, the abuser, the person that hits the child, the person that sexually abuses the child, the person that starts the whole process of duality off within everybody that they meet. So the king is composed of the positive and negative areas of the tyrant and the wimp. And then there's another little triangle that I thought was great. That's Ian again, because he's so good at this. And that is the lover. We've all got the lover within us. That's the middle part. But what are the two parts of the lover?
The pervert.
The pervert.
And the mother's boy.
And the mother's boy. The pervert and the mother's boy. And remember, we have got all of these aspects within ourselves. And the world of duality goes between the pervert and the mother's boy. The pleaser and the blamer. The person that is always wanting to make everybody pleased and the person that is wanting to make everybody perverted. We've got all of these aspects within ourselves. If we're not enlightened, we must be humble enough to say, I am not perfect. Not quite. I'm pretty good. 80% of me is good. There's an old Soto Zen phrase that says 80% is perfection. 80% of you is perfect. But that other 20%, the bit that we are working on, the bit that we are seeking feedback on, is the pervert and the mother's boy. Before we can be a true lover, I'd like to be a lover myself. And a king. I want to be a king too. So the next one in the series is The Magician.
The Manipulator and the Fool.
The Manipulator and the Fool, the Idiot. Two aspects of the Magician. And we keep swinging between being an idiot, being a foolish person, as we are so many times, and between being a manipulator, getting what we want through underhand and manipulating means. And we've all done that as well. The Hierophant, the magician, the person who is magic personified, wouldn't deign to do either of those two things. And finally, we get to the warrior.
The bully. And the coward.
Alternating between the coward and the bully. And we've all got all those aspects inside us as well. You can also point to all the astrological signs. And right in the center of the astrological signs is a space for the enlightened person. The space for the enlightened person where he can branch out, or she can branch out, into any one of those signs and be whatever they want to be, whatever the occasion demands, whatever is appropriate, and not stuck by their pain, by their fear, by their blockages, in one aspect of duality. Going further into Gurdjieffian lore, Gurdjieff was a very famous master. Came to the West around about the time of the Russian Revolution. And Gurdjieff said there's a triangle between the mind, the emotions, and the body. And he said that if you work on two of those aspects of the triangle, then the third one is stimulated. So if you work on the emotions and the body, the intellect will be stimulated. And when he's talking about emotion, he's talking about the higher emotion of compassion of the heart. So if you stimulate the intellect and the body at the same time, then the heart is stimulated. And so many of Gurdjieff's students, working on dance and working on very highly intellectual steps, at the same time, opened the heart. He said, "I am a simple teacher of dance." Meditation works in a similar manner. Very famous triangle. You can look into all the aspects of it. I won't go into it now. It's too much for this talk. But it's a very interesting triangle of energies. But the triangle I really wanted to go into is the triangle that Gurdjieff also talked about. And that is the triangle of energies. He said for one atom to jump from one energy state to another energy state, another energy must come in to help it rise. And what we're talking about here is raising our energies, our internal energies, from one state to another. Most of us are stuck in the animal side of our nature. We have not awoken our heart. How to get from the negative to the positive? How to awaken a chakra? How to jump your energy state into the heart? How to become compassionate? Not to become sentimental, but how to awaken that great transformative energy of the heart. And what Gurdjieff says is that, as an enlightened being, he said, I exude that energy of transformation because of my years of training and because I have worked in all of these various chakras. This energy of transformation comes from me. And he says, if you want to raise your energy levels, then in order to get from the positive to the negative, the other side of the triangle is compassion. You need to have a little bit of that fire that Prometheus brought down from the gods to earth in order to leaven your bread, in order to seed your energy system, in order to raise your energies from one state to another. And this is what Buddha was talking about when he was talking about the middle path. The Buddha's energy was that of compassion. And in order to get out of the world of duality, in order to get out of the world of fluctuations, in order to get out of the world of competition, where there is no such thing as friendship, in the world of competition, in this world, everybody that you see is competing with you for something. And perhaps those ones that are a little bit closer to you than the others, you can call your friends. But in reality, they're just a little bit closer to you. They can very soon, flip of the coin, turn into your enemy. The world of duality is like that. But to the world of the enlightened person, there is no such thing as an enemy. Everybody is their friend. And how do they do that? They do it by raising their energies. When they raise their energies, the heart is opened, and the heart is a wonderful cornucopia of the enlightened energy of transformation. And Gurdjieff said, if you want to raise your energies, then you need to be with me for a little while. And depending upon your talents, then you will need to be with me for longer or for shorter. He said, I want you to be with me for as short a time as possible. I want you to catch fire. I want you to know that you are a lion that has been brought up in a herd of sheep. When the young lion is eating grass with the sheep, when he sees the real lion, the wild lion, bounding across the land to eat the sheep, he becomes frightened as well and runs away with the herd of sheep. And the old lion looks at the young lion, he says, what's this? A young lion acting like a sheep. And he goes and drags that lion up by the scruff of the neck, and the young lion's going, don't hurt me, don't eat me. And he drags him down to the lake. And he says, just look at yourself. And the young lion looks in the water, and he looks at the old lion. He looks in the water again, and he says, I look like you. And the old lion roars, and the deep, throaty roar of the old lion goes across the countryside, telling everybody that the old lion is there. And the young lion says, can I try that? Roar! He goes, no, says the old lion, like this, roar. And the young lion tries, roar. And the young lion catches fire. He's no longer a member of the herd of sheep. He catches fire. He is magically transformed into his true self. All all those stories about the frogs and the princes, all those stories about the ducks and the swans, you know, the ugly duckling, all those stories by Gurdjieff of the magician who made all the people in this world think that they are sheep by advertising, by keeping their history away from them, by making them afraid, by giving them pain. All of these magical things that were given to them by the evil black magicians to keep them from knowing what their true self was. So how to get out of the world of duality? How to get out of these negative states and into a positive state through the reconciling force, as Gurdjieff called it? What were the other two names of those force, Debbie? I'm calling them positive and negative, but I think he had another term for them. Never mind. I can't remember. I don't think it really matters. I think you've got the idea of it anyway. You need to have a third force in order to raise the energy level from one to another. So, in the plane of the second chakra, of the relationships plane, of the processor that deals with relationships, of the chakra in the abdomen, the sacral chakra, there we have pain. And that pain causes desire and aversion. Because if you can have an orgasm, you can flush away part of that pain. And aversion is there when you say, I don't want to have another relationship. The last one was too painful. I'm still recovering from it. I don't want any more of that. And when the dog dies, when the cat dies, you always say, I'm not having another one, because it's just too painful to go through that. The only reason you have that pain is because you have not learned how to work with the energy of relationships in an appropriate way, where you have true choice as to whether you connect or not connect. Another two dualities, life and death. We're working here with the base chakra. When we have raised the energy of the base chakra, we know there is no such thing as death. We know there is no such thing as life. We know the truth. There is no duality. And again, the energy of transformation from an enlightened being is necessary to understand the middle path. When we talk about heaven and earth, we're talking about the yang energy of heaven. We're talking about the yin feminine nature of the earth. We're talking about our Father who art in heaven. We're talking about the Empress of the Tarot. We're talking about the Emperor of the heavens. And when we're talking about the reconciling force of the heaven and the earth, we're talking about the alchemical marriage, the marriage of heaven and earth. We're talking about enlightenment. These alchemists were not just talking about how to create the physical element of gold. They were talking about how to transform the lead of the base chakra into the gold of the Sahasrara chakra. When they were talking about physical gold, they said, that's fool's gold. Ramakrishna, a very famous Indian saint, was sitting in his temple one day, and a man came to him and he said, look, I'm a rich man. I've come to give you 1,000 gold rupees. Because rupee means gold, you know. Not now. I think it was about 50 to the pound. I said, I've got 1,000 gold rupees. A long time ago, back in the 19th century, he came to him and said, I've got some gold rupees and I want to give it to you because you're a famous saint. So Ramakrishna said, well, these gold coins are mine, are they? And the man said, yes, I'm giving them to you. He said, well, okay, I'd like you to take them back, but I'd like you to go and throw them in the river. And the man said, what? You want me to throw these gold coins into the river? Well, Ramakrishna said, they're mine, aren't they? The man said, yes. He said, you gave them to me, didn't you? He said, yes. He said, well, go and throw them in the river then. He said, yes. All right. And he walked off towards the river, and Ramakrishna never thought anything more about it until one of his sannyasins, until one of his monks came up to him. He said, you know that guy who you told to go and throw all those coins into the river? You know what he's doing? Ramakrishna said, no. He said, he's throwing them one at a time into the water, and there's a great crowd around him. And all the kids are diving off the side of the river for these gold coins. Ramakrishna said, I didn't mean him to do that, I just thought he'd just dump them all at once into the river. Now, if you are really talented on the path of enlightenment, if you're really desirous of becoming enlightened, then you will drop all of your pain all at once. A simple touch of a master will be enough to transform you. And that's why in life we have the via negativa and we have the via positiva. The path of neti neti, the path of doing something. This is why we need to have things like yoga. This is why we need to have the eight limbs of yoga. But if we're talking about bhakti yoga, we are talking about dropping the coins all at once. It depends upon our different capabilities, our different sensitivities, our different abilities on being able to understand. And when I say understand, I don't mean intellectually understand. It means our ability to digest the energy that we are being given. And if we are not capable of digesting those high energies that are emanated by any enlightened being, then the result will be that you will point the finger. To any enlightened person, you will say that that person embodies all of your worst qualities. You will nail them up. You will call them the King of the Jews and put a crown of thorns around their head. But for those that have the ears to hear, for those that have the eyes to see, for those who, like Mahakashyap, can feel the energy of the Master. It's well said that Buddha said, I'm not here for everybody. I'm here for those people with a small inkling, with a small ability to feel my energy. There's a beautiful book by the third Zen patriarch, Sozan. Patriarch is an enlightened being. There's no record of Sozan's life. There's no record of Sozan's death. There's no, the East, they don't care when they were born and when they died. It's simply enough for them that the flower of their presence, the perfume of their life, exists through the centuries to guide us now. And Sozan never stayed in one place. He moved from town to town. He spread his perfume to those people that were able to hear him. And he left behind him one book called Sinsin Ming, the faith mind of Sozan. And when they say faith, they don't mean faith, because the translators don't know what they're talking about. They are not enlightened beings. The enlightened mind of Sozan. And when they're talking about the mind of Sozan, they're talking about the empty mind of Sozan. Form is emptiness, and emptiness is form. So when Sozan says in his book, and his book is just one page, very concentrated, when he says that one preference, one criticism, and heaven and earth are set infinitely apart, this energy is of the masters, can only be digested by you when you are in a state of no mind, when you have no thoughts in your mind. Then intuitively you can accept the staff of life, the bread of the earth. The reconciling force works with each of the chakras to awaken each one. And then we get onto the law of sevens. Seven chakras. Seven major energy centers. Now, how many notes in an octave? You might have thought that, mightn't you? Because it's called an octave, but the eight notes go from do to do. So in an octave, there are only seven notes. And again, this is what Gurdjieff calls a legomenism. A legomenism is something that's been handed down as an inheritance from the wise masters of the past to help people from the present. It's to do with nada yoga. It's to do with mantra yoga. It's to do with the awakening of the chakras. It's to do with the use of music to awaken people. Something which is not intellectual. Something which gets the body moving. Something which works on the body, the mind, and the emotions. A simple methodology to enlighten all beings. So when Gurdjieff wrote his sacred hymns, written down by Hartmann, when he invented his music for his simple dancing of the Sufis, because Gurdjieff was a Sufi, then he was using music in a very knowledgeable way to awaken the energy centers of all living beings. Within each chakra, you have seven notes. And when you've completed the octave, it means you have raised the energy of that chakra from a lower level to a higher level. And you do that for each of the seven chakras, from a lower level to a higher level. And within each seven notes, within each octave, there are two points where extra energy is needed to come in from outside to get past that point of stuckness. The third note and the fifth note. This is why we have thirds and fifths in all music. This is why the ragas, the Indian mystics, used for generations by classical Indian musicians, are based very much upon thirds and fifths. Because the extra energy is needed to raise the energy of the chakras from a point of low energy to a point of high energy. And it's the same in any process. If you start to do something and you want to finish it, completing the octave, then you will find two points in any process where you have to put in more energy. And this is called the power of doing. To be able to maintain the energy of a process over a short period or a long period in order to complete it. And when he's talking about processes, he's not just talking about external processes like buying a car or baking some bread, he's also talking about the process of enlightenment. Every person needs an input of energy in order to raise their energy from one step to another. The energy of transformation, the energy of compassion, the middle way, to get out of the world of duality. And the law of seven states that this comes on the third note and the fifth note. Well, there's many magical, mystical signs like an Enneagram, the octave. All of these things are pointing in the direction of saying you need to get some energy. You need to be fired up. The psychic body is like a factory, a process. And when that factory is working correctly, then you are enlightened. Before that point, you've got blockages. You've got parts where the factory is creaking, where it's not working correctly. And in order to get that factory working, you've got to put a little bit of work into it. All the spiritual practices will help you along that path. And then I'd like to talk about the astrology of enlightenment. Over many, many lifetimes, we've been coming down to Earth to gain experience, to get rid of our karmas, which are nothing but the pains that we have gathered psychically from lifetime to lifetime. And when we're born, each of us is born with a certain astrological chart. And you can look at those charts and you can find out a tremendous thing about your personality, you can find out a tremendous thing about your ego, you can find out a tremendous thing about your own spiritual abilities and talents. On the way towards enlightenment, we collect various psychic powers. And those psychic powers can be used for good or ill. All of us have them. There's not one person that doesn't have some absolutely tremendous ability which is outside the normal. We all know we've got them. We've been gathering them from lifetime to lifetime. I don't know if anybody's ever looked at their astrological chart, but certain astrological placements tell you about your powers, about your ability to help others spiritually. If you are an adept, you can help to awaken other people's chakras, and they have an expertise in one of the areas, the chakras. Now those people have no planets or ascendants in one of the areas, like a cardinal sign. You know what a cardinal sign is? Or like a fixed sign, or like a mutable sign, or a fire, air, water, or earth sign. If you have no planets in one of those areas, then you will have psychic powers, the ability to help people in one area or another. You will have one of the energies of transformation in your being. Well, which are the cardinal signs, Devi?
Yeah.
cardinal signs. So if you have no planets in any one of those four cardinal signs, if all four signs are blank of planets, then you would be called a cardinal adept. And you would have the ability of psychic powers in that area. And the same through all the other ones as well. Each of these areas, like a fire sign or like an air sign, it's all well known in the astrological books. You can go and look it up in your chart. And then you have, they're called the adepts, and then you have some people called the aliens. Aliens are highly specialized talents and abilities in ESP and the paranormal. The kind that would have got them burnt as witches or a warlock a few centuries back. Their powers are accepted by themselves until they meet their peer group at the age of 7. They frighten their peers. They make them nervous, or they're thought of or reacted to as strange or weird or different from their peers, and they get rejected. They get so frightened by this experience that many of them think of their talents as being very bad. And they try to hide away from those talents and try to become, in inverted commas, normal for the rest of their lives. They're called aliens. They have tremendous psychic powers. The suppression of these talents begin, and they just fake it out a little bit. Now, when they start to get away from that, and when they start to come back into their normal sort of way, they can become very depressed when they realize just how alone they are. And so many of these aliens are lost at the age of 18 or 20 through depression and suicide. It's a very difficult time for aliens to realize how different they are. All aliens have the ability to contain, channel, relocate energies which would destroy people if they were not trained to use them. They have the ability to channel energy very powerfully into groups and to people. And individuals who are drawn to work with aliens develop their energy talents, their paranormal abilities, much more rapidly than they would ordinarily. The ability of the aliens is to channel energies for the benefit of human beings. They can be used for bad, they can be used for good, like all things. And an alien will normally be channeling so much power that when people come into their presence, they make them feel angry or nervous, or they project their own fears onto the alien. That's why aliens have to hide themselves away so much. They experience alienation and rejection from others because of the power which can be threatening to others. Now, aliens are those who have the Sun conjunct with Saturn, Neptune, Uranus, or Pluto, or with Venus. If you have any of those conjunctions, then you will be called an alien power, and you will have the ability to radiate energy to others. If you are an alien vessel, then you will have your moon conjunct with either
Saturn, Neptune, Uranus, or Pluto.
And you will have the appropriate energy of that conjunction. If you have in the first house
Neptune, Uranus, or Pluto,
then you will be an alien amplifier. Now, an alien vessel whose planets are in conjunction with the moon, they have the ability to draw out energies from other people, raise them, and send them back. They have the ability to take away karma. whereas alien powers have the ability to send out so much energy into a person that, like putting energy into a grease nipple, like putting grease, clean grease, into a dirty grease nipple, it thrusts out all the dirty grease. Therefore, it raises the energy in that way. Amplifiers just amplify whatever is there. So just by looking at the astrological signs of a person, you can see what sort of energy you will have. The energy of the sun conjunct, the energy of the power, is that of the high priest. The energy of the vessel is the conjunction of the moon with any of these planets, is the energy of the priestess, the intuition, the moon negative feminine qualities. Doesn't matter whether you're male or female, you will have that quality. You know, the moon astrological sign will be very calming, peaceful. People will feel more peaceful in their presence. Whereas a person who has all these conjunctions with the sun, they have the ability to spread out their aura, and people will feel correspondingly more afraid. Well, also, if you don't have any of those things, then you have the ability to develop any of them within yourself as well. And you will develop at your own pace, but faster with somebody who can give you energy. This is why people go to be with gurus over in India. This is why people go to visit Don Juan, who's developed his powers most strongly. This is why you have the guru-shishya relationship. Not for any other reason except that you want to catch fire and then go off and do your own thing. And people who have these powers, they develop their powers more and more as they get older and older. It happens with them. They feel very strange. They don't feel part of society. This is the feeling of existentialism. It was so much in the existentialist philosophers. A person who can stand outside of society, looking in. Because these people don't know what they're doing, they can also become the greatest thieves, abusers, rapists, psychopaths on this planet as well. They have the ability to go either way. You know, you can become Hitler if you are sent in the wrong direction. You can become Stalin. You can become Pol Pot. You can become Mao Zedong if you're sent off in the wrong direction. There's a certain charisma, there's a certain energy that's emanated by these people. But mostly, what everybody needs on this planet is to purify their negativities, to get rid of their pains, to put their life back into order, to harmonize their relationships. In one word, to become happy. And no matter what you are doing on this planet, you are just doing your job. You are doing whatever it was you were sent down to do. You are dealing with the experiences that you've had over many lifetimes in the past. You are trying to perfect yourself. And one thing I do know is that everybody on this planet is going to become enlightened one day.
Now, as I said at the beginning, people with this alien construct can become like the Buddha, the greatest king, or the greatest tyrant, or the greatest mystic or guru or Buddha. Devi Dhyani, my partner's chart, is an example of the moon conjunct Saturn. She is an alien vessel, one who takes karma or negative energies, transmutes them, and gives them back. My chart, which is on the 1st of October 1952 at 15:30 in the afternoon, is an example of the Sun being conjunct with Mercury, Venus, Neptune, and Saturn. This is a multiple alien power in the 8th house, the house of Pluto and of high transformation. Not only that, Pluto in my chart is in Leo, the sign of the Sun, and this means that Pluto in alien powers is conjunct the Sun also. Uranus in my chart is in Cancer, the sign of the moon. And this means that Uranus is conjunct the moon in alien powers. Alien powers give energy. They affect or change whatever they touch. This is the function of the High Priest.
Okay, I think that's all I wanted to say today. And I think we shall finish off with a short chant again. So if you'd like to sit up straight, we'll finish off with Om Shanti. Close your eyes, sit up straight, breathe deeply into your abdomens. And it's the same as before. Om is AUM, base chakra, heart chakra, top of the head. Visualization. Don't lose that contact with the base. It's incredibly easy to float off into outer space. We want to become more grounded, more rooted in the earth. Eyes closed, breathing into the abdomen. I'll do the first line, and then you can follow on with the first line when I've finished. Om Shanti, Om Shanti, Om Shanti. Shanti.
Sean.